Muktzah. Okay, we're going through some practical examples of the laws of Muktzah. Let's see what we can do today, just for a little bit. Let's see what we got here. Okay, we're up to a scale. I think we're up to a scale, maybe. We got through almost in that area where we stopped. Is a scale Muktzah on Shabbos? A mechanical scale, not the regular scale, not the electronic scale. Okay, that became now the standard. So the answer, of course, a scale is Muktzah. It's a kli shemalach talis, because a scale, it is forbidden on Shabbos to weigh, to measure. It is usser. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to weigh yourself on Shabbos on a classic mechanical scale. Therefore, a scale that's only used for weighing. It's a kli shemalach talis. Now, over here, I'm very surprised. Every type of kli shemalach talis, Rabbi Simcha Bunim Kohn is very much into this question. Is it kli shemalach talis, or category one, or category number two? Category number one is like a hammer. A hammer is something which has a permissible use and a forbidden use. The primary use of a hammer is a forbidden use, which makes and occasionally you will use a hammer for a permissible use. Therefore, it's a kli shemalach talis, or category number one, which means that you're allowed to move it litzarech gufay and litzarech nekaymay. But if you have a kli shemalach talis, or category number two, for example, a candle. A candle you only use for a forbidden use, what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, you're not allowed to light a candle. Therefore, that is kli shemalach talis, or category number two. So what is the rule? You close the door in the back, just close all the way. So a kli shemalach talis, or category number two. So we learned there's a machlokes that lichatchila you should not move it at all, not even litzarech gufay umekaymay. But b'diavad, if you really need, push comes to shove, you can use it, you can move it litzarech gufay litzarech umekaymay. So let me ask, it's a very good example of a scale. A scale. What do you use a scale for? To measure. Do you ever use a scale to crack nuts? Okay? No, I don't think so. No. Do you ever use a scale to keep the door open? You have a door, the door is swinging?
Could be used as a doorstop.
Okay, maybe. But let me ask you, I want to touch upon another idea. Let's say you have a scale that you'll never use for anything but weighing yourself. You'll never use for anything. So l'chayra, you would say, you're not allowed to weigh yourself on Shabbos, so it's a kli shemalach talis, or category number two. And therefore, you should not lechatchila. You should not move it, not for nothing. Kli shemalach talis, or category number two, which means you'd only use it exclusively for something which is forbidden to do on Shabbos. Lechatchila should not be moved, even litzarech gufay or litzarech mekaymay. But here, I think the reason why he does not say that it's in category number two is it touches upon another principle which we're going to come to in a few moments, and that is, why are you not allowed to weigh yourself on Shabbos? We all know that you do not step on a scale on Shabbos. Is
not
that
an angle scale, not an electronic?
Right. I said right. Not electronic. Electronic is also not talking about, because that's you're triggering electronic device. That's also midrabban. But what about a mechanical scale? Why not? Is that really also? Are you violating any halakhic principle by weighing yourself on scale? You're not.
You're not really measuring.
When you step on a scale on Shabbos. No, but you're using it. It's not an Isser Deraisa for sure, not. And L'chora, it's not even an Isser Midrabanan. To step on a bathroom scale to weigh yourself, L'chora, it's prohibited because of the Dechol. I don't know. We don't measure on Shabbos. But the reason why we don't measure, it's a Chumrah. It's not an Ikar Hadin. And the proof is that you're allowed to weigh and measure for L'tzorech Mitzvah. Pesach night, if you want to be from those who have a chart. I don't recommend this. If you want to use to have a chart, or you want to go and grind up the matzah, grind up your, and you want to go put it into a schnapps cup or into a scale, you're allowed to do it. You're allowed to measure, as long as you're not allowed to measure litzorech mitzvah on Shabbos. So you see, obviously, it's not an isadur. It's not osur. It's not osur midirai. It's not osur midirabon. It's not midirabon. Otherwise, you could not do it for tzorach mitzvah. So therefore, it's only a chumrah. So why don't we measure for other ordinary things? Why does the person measure their weight? Maybe taka is a mitzvah. Shmartim oides nafshay sechem, not eat too much chalant. So why don't we do it? It's because uvda dechol. It's not shabbistic. It's not the proper thing. It's a chazal stepped in and said, do not do mundane measurements on Shabbos. So this is a very important principle in the laws of Muktzah. Anything that is osur, mishum uvda dechol, the utensil that is used to do this is not called muksa. It's not. The laws of muksa are very much relaxed. If even muksa exists altogether, in fact, in many examples I'll show you in a few moments, there's no muksa. Something which is only also mishum chumra is not muksa, because me'ikar hadin. I'll give you here. This is a classic example: liquid soap. You have on your kitchen counter. What does everyone have? What brand Dawn. Do you have? Dawn. You have Dawn on your counter. Are you allowed to use Dawn on Shabbos to wash your hands? L'chore not. People will tell you should not use Dawn because it's too thick. It's just too thick. When it's too thick and you're going to take Dawn and put it on your hands, you're going to smooth it. M'mareach. You're smoothing. Is that really usur? Is that liquid? It's definitely not usur. It's definitely not m'ikar hadin usur. It's not thick enough that it has to probably be a solid, like a bar of soap. The only time you're really going to violate m'mareach smoothing is a hard bar of soap.
What's the difference than hand soap that you...
The Shabbos hand soap is because diluted. When you dilute, if you before Shabbos, even on Shabbos, I think some hold even on Shabbos, you can. If you dilute it, so then it's mutter. When it's thick, the good stuff, the quality hand soap, you can't use on Shabbos. Why? Because it's just too thick. So what? I dilute it. Now it's thinner. All of a sudden it becomes mutter. What's the difference? Because it's not so thick, so therefore you're not really smoothing. You're not really smoothing a gel. When it's thick, it's a gel. When I dilute it, it's not a gel. The truth is, even when it's thick, me'ikar hadin, it's mutter. There's no real violation of halacha taking Dawn soap and using it to wash your hands on Shabbos. The fact that it's a little jelly does not qualify for the issur d'oraisa or even the issur midrabbanan of mimareach. We don't do it. You're not going to find any book in Eichler's that's going to tell you that you're allowed to take Dawn soap on Shabbos and you're allowed to use it to wash your hands. You're not going to find. We don't do it because we don't really know what the boundaries are. So if you want to use it, so add before Shabbos, add some water, mix it a little bit so it should be diluted. Or if you want to go buy in the store, it's this what it's still in the store, the Shabbos soaps, the Yeshivish brands, that's watered. That's like they probably use one bottle of Dawn to make the whole store's worth the whole store's worth of Shabbos soap. But it's only also as a chumrah. Therefore, is it muksa? Are you allowed to move it on Shabbos? It's not muksa. This is my favorite share in the book. You have a container, you have a bottle of Dawn soap on your counter, on your counter, and you want to move it. Are you allowed to move it? Yeah, it's not muksa. I don't even know if he calls it. I don't even know if he calls it a klit shemlach to liyisra. I think he calls it just mutter. You're allowed to move it. It's not muksa because the only reason why we don't use it is not because we consider it to be an isser. It's true. We don't do it because it's
the same thing for toothpaste.
To know toothpaste, I don't know. I don't know where you draw the line. Toothpaste is much, much thicker than Dawn soap.
Toothpaste is a gel.
That's a real gel, but even that might not necessarily be osur. Because what is mimareach? Mimareach lechayr is only when you're starting with a solid. You have a bar of soap, ivory bar of soap that you wet it. That's a derais. That can be a derais potentially. But you're starting with even toothpaste. I don't even know if toothpaste. Maybe toothpaste we're more sensitive because it's really thicker. That's significantly thicker than the hand soap that's sold in the stores. But being that the hand soap is not really usur, therefore anything that is a chumra is not muksa. That's the important principle. You're nodding your head. That's okay. So therefore, I'm trying to assume here the reason why he doesn't come down very heavy on a scale. He doesn't say anything. No notes over here. Everything he has a lot of notes for. He says a bathroom scale is a category kli shemalach d'liyaser because it has no use other than to weigh oneself, which is prohibited on Shabbos. Excuse me, Rabbi Simcha Budim Kohn. When it comes to every other thing, you have something like this, no other use, you right away say it's category number two, and therefore, l'chadchila, you shouldn't move it all together. How come he does not saying that over here? So I'm trying to assume it's because really using a scale on Shabbos to weigh yourself is not really osur. It's only a chumrah. And the proof is, you can use a scale to weigh dvar mitzvah. So therefore, since it's not really osur, we associate it with Isser, so we taka don't move it for no reason, but letzach gufay or letzach makayma is mutter, but it's definitely not a category number two. Because over here, it's really mutter maker adin. Okay, that's halacha. Money we discussed, very easy money is muksa machmas atzmai. Coins, dollar bills. It's not even called a utensil. That's not a utensil. There's no heter to move money at all on Shabbos. You're not allowed to touch, you're not allowed to move money in any way on Shabbos in the normal way. If you have a situation where you need to move it, you have to use your body. You have to use your body, your elbow, your foot, tiltul al yidei gufay. And it's not ideal to move it with a stick. If there's money on the table, you should not use a stick to move the money. You should not, if it's on a tray and the tray is not a bosses, you're also not allowed to move it. That's called tiltul minatzad. Tiltul minatzad is not permitted l'chatchila for a davar that is muksa machmas atzmai. The only way you can move sin that's muksa machmas atzmai is bigufa, is with your body. Okay. This is sometimes you happen, it's tzedakah box. Okay, you have pushka. Some people have pushkas, they put pushkas on the table, and women they give tzedakah right before when they light candles. So it's also it's 100% muksa, no moving at all. It's muksa machmas atzmai. The money inside the pushka box is.
But the pushka box itself is.
So the pushka box itself. What would be if there's no money in the pushka box? There's an empty pushka box. So then l'chayre, it would be a kli shemalach to the iser, and then there would be mutu l'tzarech gufay or l'tzarech mekoyma. If there's money in the pushka box, then it becomes a bosses to the money, and the money is muksa machmas atzmai, and then the pushka box will also be machmas atzmai within bosses. But if there's nothing in the pushka box, l'chayre, you're right, it should be no difference then. I'll show you a change dispenser.
But if you have things on the table which are worth more than the pushka box,
so then the table is not a bosses. The table does not become a bosses, but the pushka box itself is still muksa.
That means you would not be allowed to move the table.
What you have to do is you have to first kick the pushka box off the table with your elbow, and then you can move the table. Okay, let's review his question. You have on the table here. What's I? You have on the table a pushka box, and you have a sitter. What's more chashuv? The sitter. For Shabbos, you need the sitter. So is the table the bosses to the money, to the pushka box? No. Why is that? Because I have on the table that's more chashuv. Another way, let's say you only have on the table a pushka box, but it was not my kavanah that the pushka box should be on the table. My kavanah was to remove the pushka box before Shabbos began. I just did not get a chance to remove it. I forgot. So since your kavanah was that it should not be on the table the entire Shabbos, the table is not a bosses. Am I allowed to move the table now with the pushka box on the table? No, because by moving the table, you're moving the pushka box. That is called tiltul min hatzad. I'm moving the table in the normal way, and by doing so, I am indirectly moving the muksa. You are not allowed to move muksa machmas atzmai min hatzad. So what should you do? You should remove the muksa from the table. How do you do that? You remove it with your elbow or a body part. So you're removing the muksa in an unusual way.
So it's going to roll off from the floor.
So let it roll off on the floor. And then you'll kick it to the side.
Then you have your wife to worry about.
So you'll kick it to the side. But if it's going to shad, if the pushka box is going to shad, there's going to be then money all over the floor, then you're right. Then you are allowed to move the table with the pushka on it.
And then you are allowed?
If it's going to get damaged, or it's going to create a mess, or it's going to create a problem. If you're not going to create a problem by moving it, by kicking it, then you're not allowed to move muksa machmas atzmai min hatzad, if you can first remove it with your guf in an unusual way. So if you can, you kick it off the table or with your elbow, it falls on the floor, then you kick it with your foot to the side. And now the table you can move as you wish, because the table is not a bosses. But if you wanted it to be there the entire Shabbos, if this is where the pushka box belongs, and you do not have a siddur, you don't have anything else on the table, and this is where it was meant to be the entire Shabbos, and now there's a change in plan, and you want to move the table, even if you were to kick the mucks the pushka off the table with your elbow, with your foot, it doesn't matter, the table is still called a basis, and you cannot move the table in a normal way. You'd have to kick the table to move the table. That might be problematic, that might not be an option. You're sitting for something very big, your wife's not going to want you kicking the table. The only way you'll be allowed to move the table is in a normal way. You're not allowed to do that. And you know, because the table would, in that case, would be a bosses. Okay, a change dispenser is basically the same thing as a pushka box. I don't know, people have change dispensers, people, whatever, so I don't even know why it brings down. It's the same thing, if there's money inside, it's a bosses, muksa machmasat, there's nothing inside, it's a klitsch machal yisr. A bed, a folding bed, pashut, it's not muksa at all, and whatsoever. A bed, a folding bed is a kli, it's meant to open and close. You're not creating an oil. That's not called an oil. You're not. It's not meant to go hide underneath it. It's mutter lechatchila to move a bed, open and close the folding bed. It's mutter. Now, enshing shaila, a fly swatter. What would you say? Let's see what people would say. What status would you give a fly swatter on Shabbos? I want to use it as a fan. I want to fan myself. What? Or I want to move. I'm not going to kill the bugs. You're not allowed to kill a bug if it's not threatening you. If a bug is not a threat, you're not allowed to kill a bug. If a bug is a threat, you can kill it. For example, a bee in a sukkah, if you're afraid of the bee, it's going to sting you, you're allowed to kill it. It's not a malacha. Killing is only usur when you want it for a use. I want to kill it because I want it. I want to eat its meat. I want the hide. When you kill a bee, you have no use for the bee. So it's not osir. And if it's a hezik, if it's a sakana, you're allowed to kill a bee. You're allowed to kill mosquitoes if you feel that they pose to you a threat. A fly, you're not allowed to kill. Unless you're afraid that it's poison. Some they say today, and they say on the news, is that flies can be more dangerous than mosquitoes. Because they're carriers. Flies hang out. They're attracted to waste, to garbage. They hang out by excrement. So if you feel that the fly that's hovering around you has been in places that are not so good, then you feel it's a threat. It's sakonis nefash, so you're allowed to kill the fly. But otherwise, you're not allowed to take the life of a creature on Shabbos. So what is the fly swatter meant to do? It's meant to do one thing only, to kill. It's a kli mashkes. It's meant to kill a fly. That's a utensil. That's what it is. A kli doesn't have to have a receptacle. Anything, a candle is called a kli. It's no receptacle. Anything that serves a function. It's called the utensil. So a fly swatter is called a kli. And what is its primary function? To do something that is not permitted on Shabbos. Therefore, a fly swatter is a kli shemalachta li iser. Now, next step. Is the kli shemalachta li iser category 1 or category number 2? Does it also have a permissible use? Or is it exclusively used for a forbidden use, which would result that you're not allowed to move it lichatchila, only bidiyavet? So what is the answer? So he brings here, he has a very long footnote on this topic, and his conclusion is, a fly swatter is category number 1, because most of the time, you use a fly swatter, you miss. So what function does it really serve during the week? It doesn't only serve to kill. It serves to scare away. This fly is a nuisance, so you use it to get rid of the nuisance. Getting rid of a nuisance during the week is not a malacha. That's permitted. That's permitted. So therefore maybe even on Shabbos the fly swatter should not even be called a kli shemalach d'liyisin, because the statistics are you miss most of the time. But the goal is to kill. So therefore the bottom line is it is definitely not category number 2. It's at most category number 1. Category number 1 is very lenient. It's mutter, l'tzarech mekaymai, if it's bothering you, you can move it to the side in a regular way. And even l'tzarech gufai, if I want to take on Shabbos a fly swatter, just not to kill the fly, but to chase it away. There's a bee or there's some creature, a fly that's bothering me, so I want to use the fly swatter just not to kill it, just to get out of here. Leave me alone. Mutter, because kli shemalachta le'iser, category number 1, is mutter l'tzarech gufay, and certainly l'tzarech mekaymai. Okay, next case. These people don't know. They get all confused. Try to memorize this. artificial plants are not muksa. Artificial plants, if you have on the table by a simcha, very common, by a simcha, you have on the table flowers. Now, even the flowers that are watered, that I don't know, that I want to hold back on, because that's a subject to itself. Usually it's mutter also, but let's hold back for one moment on that. We'll come down a little bit later on. I need to prepare the details. But certainly, if you have on the table artificial plants, they're not muksa at all. There is no issue of muksa moving artificial plants, flowers, things like that that are on the table for yoifi, for beauty. You're not supposed to take them home either. It belongs to the gemach. Okay, now this is a complicated sugya. That I told you I want to hold back for one moment, okay? Because I didn't prepare. Usually they're not. You're allowed to move them. Flowers are usually not muksa, but there are exceptions. So let's pull back for one moment on that. Blina, to remind me, we must make sure I have it over here. I just didn't prepare. Okay, next thing. This is a very complex topic. A drawer. You have a table. Very common. You have a table, and the table has a drawer, or it's a desk, a small desk, a big desk, and it has drawers. And in the drawers are muksa. In the drawers are, there's money, there's a wallet, there are things which are certainly not, whatever they are, they're certainly 100% muksa. Two questions. Number one, can I open the drawer? Number two, can I move the whole table? Now, the drawer, let's say the only thing in the drawer is money. So you're not allowed to open up the drawer because there's no question about it. The money is muksa, and the drawer is a basis to the money. The only thing I have in this drawer is money. Nothing else but money. What are you opening the drawer for? To look at the money? Whatever, there's no reason to open the drawer. And if you want to open the drawer, you're not allowed to because the drawer is a boss's. Okay, I'm not going to open the drawer. I want to move the table. I want to take the whole desk and move the desk. But I'm moving the desk, I'm also moving the money. Now, let's discuss the case where on this table there's nothing but money. The other drawers are empty or there are no other drawers and there's nothing on the surface of the table. Let's make it very, very simple. You have a desk, has one drawer. In the one drawer is a stack of dollar bills. And I want to move the entire desk to another location. I want to use it, whatever it is. Are you allowed to do so? So the answer is, it depends if the drawer is removable or if the drawer is not removable. Now you would think, what I'm going to tell you is the opposite of what you would imagine. If the drawer is not removable, it's permanently attached to the desk, You are allowed. It's counterintuitive. You are allowed to move the table. How could that possibly be? Why don't we say that the drawer is a basis to the money, and being that it's attached, the entire desk is a basis to the money? The answer is no way. In order for it to be a basis, the object, it's meant to support the muksa. A desk is not meant to be a container for money. That's not the way it goes. A desk is a desk. In the desk, it happens to be there's a drawer, and in the drawer there's money. You are not mivatel, nullify the significant part to something that is insignificant. Therefore, if the drawer is permanently attached to the desk is not a basis. Not. Because the drawer is considered to be something insignificant. Something that is tofel to the primary function of this object, which is to serve as a desk. So the desk is not a basis. Okay, it's not a basis. Am I not allowed to move it? Because by moving it, I'm also indirectly going to be moving the money and the drawer. So the answer is, it's not ideal. Because this is called tiltol min hatzad. By me moving the desk, which is not a basis, I will be indirectly moving the muksa that's inside the drawer. This classic example of I'm moving something in the normal way, and in the process of doing it in the normal way, I am indirectly moving muksa. This is called tiltol min hatzad. Is tiltol min hatzad mutter? No, it's not. What should you do? You should ask a non-Jew to remove the money for you. that you're allowed to do. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to remove muksa. The laws of Amir Lachim do not generally apply to muksa. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to move muksa. That's pretty much almost always the case. You're allowed to, so, or if you can't get a non-Jew to move the muksa, so you should use your elbow, or use your foot, or your teeth, be very creative somehow in opening up the drawer and getting rid of the money from the drawer with your guf in an unusual way. That's always a heter to move muksa. Now when I want to move the table, I'm not moving muksa anymore. That would be the ideal situation. Let us say the drawer is removable. You can just pull the drawer right out. It's not permanently attached. So then, this is what it says in the halacha, the drawer, we actually learned this in the Aruch HaShulchan, it was very complicated, we learned this in the Aruch HaShulchan, then, being that it's removable, it's not considered tofel. Therefore, the entire desk now becomes a basis. It's a very big chiddush. If the drawer is removable, then the money is muksa, the drawer is a basis to the, and now the entire desk becomes a basis to this drawer and this muksa. And therefore, even if you were to ask a non-Jew to take out the money and take away the drawer is also, you're not going to move the drawer because the drawer is surely in your basis, or you do it yourself with your body, you are still not allowed to move the desk in the normal way. So to review, you have a desk. In the desk, you have nothing but money. Because if you had something other than money, automatically the desk would be a basis, l'davar ha'asur, and l'davar ha'mutar. So that changes the dynamics. Then there's no din basis. But let's say the only thing in the drawer desk is money, which is muksa machmas atzmai. So the drawer l'cha'ira is certainly going... I shouldn't say that. If the drawer is permanently attached to the desk, then there's no basis. Because you're not mevatel a whole desk to money inside of a drawer that's permanently attached. So what should you do? Somehow get rid of the muksa, either through a non-Jew or by you doing it through with your body. And then you got rid of the muksa. Then you can move the desk in the normal way. And there is no issue here of tiltal. There is no issue of tiltal min hatzad. There's no basis because it was never a basis to begin with. But if the drawer is removable, then the drawer is not bottled to the desk. Then we consider everything to be independent one of another. And being that the desk is supporting, is as a host to this drawer, which is a host to the money, the entire desk becomes the basis. Even if you were to remove the muksa through a non-Jew or by yourself with your body, the desk remains a basis and you're not allowed to move the desk. Now, next question. What about a drawer that you could remove? It's attached. If you pull the drawer out, and that's not going anywhere. You can pull it out the whole day. But you just got to push your fingers in the two slots. You put your fingers, you push it down, and that releases the lever. And then the drawer just slides. You bend a different way, and you slide it, slides right. It's very easy. It's very easy to remove as long as you know what you're doing. You don't need any special tools. You don't need any special tools. The way it is, it's not coming out. And if you don't know what you're doing, there's no way it's coming out. You'll never be able to pull it out. You can stand, you can sit the whole day and you won't. But if you just know what to do, you know where to put your finger in the right place at the right time, guess what? It slides out like butter, like a hot knife on butter. It comes out like without any issue. So he goes through the whole sugi here on the bottom, and for those that he says, that's called detachable. That in halacha, the consensus of the poskim is, that is called a detachable drawer. If you don't need a special tool, you just can do with your bare hands, mm-hmm. knowing where to put your hands, pushing the brackets in the right place easily, without any much effort, that's called detachable.
Even if you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, you ask your child, they'll tell you what to do. You ask the toddler, he'll tell you where to put your fingers to get the drawer out. So if someone will teach you if someone can teach you what to do to get the drawer out, that results in a very big chumrah. That means it's detachable. If it's detachable, and the only thing in the drawer is muksa machmas atzmai, so everything now becomes a basis to this muksa object, And on Shabbos, even if you were to succeed in removing the muksa, so there's no issue of total mitzad, total machma minatzad, total minatzad, it still remains also because of the rules of bosses. Okay, so those are the rules of moving out. But what happens, the more common case is you have a desk and you have a drawer, and in the drawer it's not just muksa, in the drawer is non-muksa. And what you need for Shabbos, why are you opening up the drawer? Because I need the non-muksa. I need the sitter. I need to get a garment. I need to get something. So since even though what you need to get is not very valuable, I need another yarmulke. My yarmulke blew away. I know in the drawer there's another yarmulke. The yarmulke cost in the store, I don't know what it cost, $5, $6, whatever it cost. And there's also in the drawer my wallet I have in the wallet $100 cash. Tefillin is not really muksa. Tefillin, we have to go back and discuss tefillin more. Tefillin, the kaplas halacha, tefillin b'derech klal is not muksa. Why? Very interesting reason why it's not muksa, because you can use tefillin as a case study in Shulchan Aruch. You're learning Shulchan Aruch. You have to have a shin. You have to have charitzin. You have to have, as you're perfectly square. Can you show me an example of tefillin? Since you, even though we do not wear tefillin, but since you can use tefillin as an object which you can study to learn the halachos of tefillin, so tefillin are not really muksa. The laws of tefillin, the muksa of tefillin is very much relaxed. But if you have in a drawer two items, one item you need for Shabbos, one is muksa, one you do not need, that's not called a basis. Problem is, by you opening up the drawer, you're also moving the muksa. So you, by opening the drawer, you're being metaltel muksa min hatzad. It's a problem. So how should you open the drawer? You should lechatchila open the drawer with your body in an unusual way. Somehow, instead of opening, pulling the knob with your front of your hand, do it with the back of your hand. Try to find some unusual way with your body, with your elbow if that's possible, or I don't know, with your foot. If you can't, you have to use your hand, so do it, whatever you would do during the week with your hand, do it differently. Instead of using the front of your hand, somehow do it with your pinky, with the back of the hand, because you're doing what's called tiltul min hatzat. I'm moving muksa. If I open the drawer in the normal way, I'm not moving the muksa directly, but I'm causing the muksa to be moved. Causing the muksa to be moved when you're moving something else in the normal way is called tiltul min hatzad. You're not allowed to do that. That's not ideal. You only can do that in very unusual circumstances, but most of the time you're not allowed to do it. So what should you do then? You do it with your body in an unusual way. But the chiddush is, then what would happen? What would happen if you would now, after you open up the drawer, you would then use your elbow to remove the muksa? You can then close the drawer, because if you do not remove the muksa, there's really no heter for you to close the drawer anymore. And even if because the drawer it's tiltul min hatzad for no purpose whatsoever. Once you open the drawer and you get the yarmulke, now I want to close the drawer. You don't want to close the drawer. You mean metaltal muksa, tiltul min hatzad for no purpose. So you'll say it's
to
in the way.
Orderly. I mean, that's not considered a purpose.
L'chore not, unless there are guests who are coming and you'll be embarrassed. That's a heter. If guests are coming, you're going to be embarrassed. How come all the drawers are open? You were robbed last night. Why were all the drawers open? That is a heter. But for your own sense of order, unless the person is a doctor says that this person, you know, under medication and things that are not perfectly in line can trigger who knows what, so maybe that would be heter, but otherwise not. So if you have something in the drawer that's more expensive, so they have two things, then it's at the boss's level, also level motor. Okay, another example. Okay, the other thing is very simple.
So how do you close it?
You don't.
You can't close. You can't close it a different way.
You cannot close it. If you're really desperate, you can close it with your body. Tiltul b'guf. You can close it with your body. That's only if you're very, very desperate. Okay, what about, these are very similar. Okay, wallet is very similar. Wallet which has money inside is muksa machmas atzma. It's a basis. If there's nothing in the wallet, it's an empty wallet, then it's a kli, shemalach to l'isser, category number one, and you're allowed to move it l'tzarech gufay u l'tzarech mekaymai. Okay, what about, okay, other, let's say you have tiles, let's say you're doing construction in your home, and the contractor leaves lying around some empty tiles, empty wood, some things that they use for construction. Also, you're not allowed to move these things, leftover building materials in the home, tiles, paint, sheetrock, or anything that's used in construction that's just lying around from a construction project. It's muksa machmas atzmai, and you're not allowed to move it. If it's a danger that we discussed, the laws of muksa are lifted when it comes to a sakana. Rabbi Yashiv says, I think it was Rabbi Yashiv, says a danger is called three people. If you have three people and three adults walking around an open area, that already becomes a danger. One person, you have things lying around that you know you might trip over. You might trip on something, mm-hmm. Something is lying, it doesn't belong here. So one person and two people are expected to be aware that there's something here that's in the way, that you be careful. And it's muksa, you're not allowed to move it. Oh, but it's a danger. Is it really a danger? You don't have enough seichel to see there's something over here? If you'll say, yeah, it's taka true, I don't. Then listen, okay, so what do you want? So no, safety first. But generally, the rule of thumb is less than three people is not called a danger. Three people somehow is chaos. Two is company, three is a crowd. Okay, it's chaos, three people. So then you're allowed to remove things that are in your way. Okay, that's, I think, else in the section. Okay, all the other things are simple here. Let's go down to one more thing, one more. Let me just touch upon one thing if we have time. Shatnas. It's a very, very big sugya. Shatnas. One thing I want to question before we go over. Let's say you have a drawer, you don't know what's inside. I don't know what's inside. There's a drawer, and I'm looking for my yarmulke. I'm looking for another hand towel. I'm looking for something. It might be in the drawer, there might be some muksa as well. I really have no clue what's inside. Are you allowed to take a risk? So l'chor, you are. You're allowed to. If you don't know, and there's a reasonable understanding that in the drawer, I'll find what I need, and there's no muksa. So the pashtus is, if it's long as it's 50% chance, you can honestly say it's a 50% chance that what's in the drawer is what I need, You allow to open the drawer.
What if there's also a 50% chance that there's muksa in it?
No, that's what I mean. 50-50. It means there's going to be 50%. There's going to be so it's only till menatzah. Yes, opening up a drawer, 50-50. Opening up a drawer, even with real muksa inside, is not really asr, because I'm doing tiltul menatzah. I'm opening the drawer in the usual way, and by doing so, I'm moving muksa. I didn't move the muksa. I moved the drawer. It happens to be by moving the drawer, I happened to move the muksa. Did I want to move the muksa? No. I don't care for the muksa. I care for what I want. So the ikar I didn't really mutter.
What if it's a 50% chance that there's muksa, but only a 10% chance that you're
what's the other 40%?
So then it's a problem. So then you should open the drawer. The truth is, even in that situation, it's really mutter. You can be makel, because tiltul menatzat is only osur meikar hadin when I'm moving my kavan is to move the muksa. I have here muksa. I don't want the muksa to be here. I just don't want it to be. I have over here muksa on top. I have over here this safe on top of this safe. This is the muksa. I don't want this to be here. I don't want it to be here. So the way I'm going to move this is by moving this. So I'm not touching the muksa. I'm in metaltal this in a normal way. I just so happens that I'm metaltal this in a normal way. I'm also moving the muksa. That's called tiltul menatzat. But what's my kavana? What do I want to move? I want to move the muksa. That's also. But if I don't care about the muksa, I want to move this safer. I don't care about the muksa. It means nothing to me. It's here, there, zero. It just so happens that when I move this, I'm going to end up moving this. Really, it's mutter. Because I'm not touching the muksa directly. I'm only moving it min atzad. And I don't even care that I'm moving it. I'm not moving the object for the muksa. I'm moving the object for the permissible muksa. So therefore, really, it's mutter. We're machmir. We have a tendency to be machmir, not even to do that. If you can, you get rid of the muksa with your elbow, get rid of it. Therefore, certainly, when you don't even know what's inside. I have a drawer. What's in the drawer? Who knows what I'll find in the drawer? I'll find skeletons in the drawer. Who knows? Who knows what I'm going to find in the drawer? But right now, I'm looking for a towel. I'm looking for my pajamas. I'm looking for something for a sitter. So I'm going to open the drawer. It might result in moving the muksa. Do I want to move the muksa? No, I have no kavana for the muksa whatsoever. My kavana is to search for the permissible object. So therefore, mikra din, it's mutter. It's mutter. There's no reason why you cannot let open up the drawer because you may be moving muksa inside. You don't even know there's muksa. You don't even know there's muksa inside. And I don't care about moving the muksa. So there really is no issue moving. If you happen to know in advance there's muksa inside, So then, l'chatchila, you should try to open the drawer with your elbow, with your guf, not doing it a normal way. But if what you don't know does not hurt you.
I thought they always used to say, if you have your talis and your tefillin in the same bag, on Shabbos, you're not allowed to go in and get your talis.
Who said that? That's not true.
Said that? Was it book-wise? Good.
If you have a talis, your tefillin might be a talis.
Yeah, and your tefillin are in the same...
It's not ideal because by taking your talis, you're going to end up moving the tefillin, especially if the tefillin are on top. Some people put the talis on top, some put the talis, the tefillin on the top. It depends what you do. But what are you doing in that situation? That's a classic example of tiltul min atzad. I'm taking out the talis, and by taking out the talis, I'm causing the tefillin to move. I'm not touching the tefillin, I'm causing the tefillin to move. So it's tiltul min atzad. And what is my kavana? My kavana is for the talis. My kavana, even though the tefillin are moving, that's only indirect. I don't care that the tefillin should move. That's tiltul min atzad, and you have a need for a mitzvah. It's mutter.
It's mutter
b'diavad. It's not ideal that you should put yourself in that situation. If you know before Shabbos that you're going to need your talis on Shabbos, l'chatchila you should take your talis out of the bag, so you should not come to be metaltal muksa afilu min atzad. But once, yes, mutter. Once it already happens, it's mutter.
Mutter.
It's mutter. But it's mutter. Mutter. And you want to say it's a bosses? You put the tefillin on top. You don't have kavana that it should be. That it should be the whole. That's what it has to be. It should be. You want to say it's a bosses? I don't think you say it's not a bosses. It's not meant. It's not meant. It's not. It's not meant to support it. It's not a table. It's like putting things in the freezer. So it goes back to the classic example. You have in the freezer raw vegetables. Raw vegetables packed in plastic bags is muksa, 100% muksa. The only way you can eat these vegetables is, well, these things is only through cooking. You can't eat it raw. There's no way you can eat it. Raw meat is an exception because raw meat, the Gemara says, you can eat raw. You can suck it, you can eat it. But there are certain types of foods in the freezer that have absolutely no use on Shabbos. The only way you can use this food is through cooking. Therefore, it's 100% muksa. Let's say you open up the freezer and you want to take out some ice cream. And the ice cream happens to be supporting the muksa frozen object. You have the raw vegetables, we have some canned things which have to be whatever it is. So it's a bosses. So the ice cream is supporting, it's a perfect pedestal, the muksa. It's a bosses. How am I allowed to take out the ice cream? It's a bosses. So the rule is, anytime you put something is a boss, it's only out of convenience. Because of space consideration, that is not called a boss. There's limited space in your talis bag. It's like a freezer. And the only reason why the tefillin are resting upon the talis in a situation where it does rest upon a talis is only because space considerations. Not because I want the talis to serve as a pedestal for the tefillin. That no one does that. It's ridiculous. So it cannot be considered the bosses. So what's the problem? By taking out the talis, I'm moving the tefillin? You're right, that's a problem. It's called tiltul min atzad. Can you do it with your elbow? No. I don't think it's not very possible to take with your teeth and take out your talis. It's not going to work very well. So the only way you can take out the talis is in the normal way. And by doing so, you're causing the muksa to move. Do I want to move the muksa? No. I don't want to move the muksa. I want to move the talis. So it's tiltul min atzad, where your kavana is not for the muksa. And you have a very good reason also. You're not just doing it for fun. You're doing it because you're a mitzvah. So it's mutter. Okay, so we've knocked out bosses. We've knocked out tiltul min atzad. and it's mutter. Okay, one last thing, for one second, it's very, very late, maybe we shouldn't even say this, I'll just say it out and talk about more tomorrow. It's very interesting, Shaila, shatnes. You have at home a brand new suit, and you have not yet have it checked for shatnes.
So
it's a suffix. It's a suffix. Even a suffix. And let's say it's vadai shatnes. Is it muksa? Is a garment that has suffix shatnes muksa on Shabbos? I have no use for it. I can't wear it.
Want to try it on?
You want to try it on. That why you but you can't wear it. Trying on is not considered a use. Why is that considered a use in Shabbos? Seems the person can say it's not. That's not called trying on. Just to show what I bought. To show I'm not trying lechatchila. Doesn't seem that that's considered to be a significant use. So this is basically it is 100% muksa. Clothing that is shatnez is muksa. There's nothing to talk about. Here is the interesting shayla. There's a big machlek sapayiskim. A guy. Why should be muksa? Why should be muksa? I give it to a guy. A guy is allowed to wear shatnez, so the sound doesn't matter. Just because you can give it to a guy, you're not going to give it to a guy. We don't look at that. Well, what would happen if a guy comes to your home? Think about this. You invite over a guy. How do they? For Shabbos meal. Okay, a Shabbos meal. Vladimir Putin, every Friday night. You know who he ate when he was a little boy? You know why he's so good to Jews? He ate next door. There was a frum family living next door to Vladimir Putin, and there's Vladimir Putin's of parents worked. They worked very hard. They were very poor, and they worked. They worked very, very hard, and this family, this the mother of this frum family, she saw this boy Vladimir. What are you doing? Come for dinner. She had rachmanis on him. He had nothing to do, he was just sitting around, doing nothing, he had no food, he was very hungry, it was very obvious to this woman that he was very hungry. So come join us. So every Friday night, this balabaster invited Vladimir Putin to a Suuda Shabbos. And the father would make Kiddush, he come and he saw the nearest Shabbos, and the father made Kiddush, and this boy sat around, dressed in Shabbos clothing, Divrei Torah, Zemirois, a good meal. And it made an impression on him. It made an impression on him.
Ad hayoyim hazeh.
He goes to visit her. He goes to visit her still.
She goes there to Israel.
There to Israel.
And when he went there to Israel,
wow.
He made a point to go to visit.
Isn't that amazing? And he has a certain sensitivity to Yadus. Okay, he's not everything he's under his control. You know, there are a lot of things in the Russian government that's not under his control. But when he has his way, he's very good to front people because he has certain sensitivity. So what happens if Vladimir comes over and it's very cold, the cold Russian winter, and he takes off his coat and he puts his coat down? Is this woman, was she allowed to take his coat and hang up his coat? And then let's say he puts his coat down on his own, he hangs up, is she allowed to take the coat and give it back to him? Not so simple. Because there's the real shayla of shatnez. And being that it's shatnez, or is a Jew allowed to move? Now today you would say, well, it's pikuach nefesh for us, right? In hindsight, it's easy to say, oh, KGB, you're not going to mess around, pikuach nefesh. But in hindsight, are you allowed to go and be metaltel the clothing of a non-Jew on Shabbos when there's a possibility that it's shatnez, and if it's shatnez, it's also for us. So you'll say, well, for us it's also, but it has the use. For him it has the use.
Is Rov clothing the shatnez?
What?
Is Rov clothing shatnez? Rov clothing that's pretty.
You want to say go bust the Rov? Interesting question. You want to go, I don't know, yes, a very good question, I don't know the answer. We're saying very, very good. So maybe we should go bust the Rov. Now, so the truth is, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, this question was posed, it doesn't really say this anywhere. So this question was posed to Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, and he said that it's mutter. He said it's mutter. Anything, shatnez of a goy is mutter. A Jew is also. But the shatnez of a goy has a use. A goy can use, it's for a goy, it has a use. It's a piece of garment which he wears. It doesn't mean for you. It has a use. It's mutter. So then he said, they showed, I think even he himself, of Simcha Budim Kum Shonim, a Mordechai, one of the early Rishonim, who says, it's Aser. Shatnez of a goy is Aser. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach says, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach is like, it's written up in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa many, many years ago. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach Paskin, Shatnez of a goy is Muksa. It's mutter. So he showed him, it says in the Mordechai, he found the obscure Mordechai that says that it's Aser. So Shlomo Zalman Arbach said to him, Rav Simcha Bunim Kohn, I have charata. I didn't know about this Mordechai. I retract my psak. So go look now. Problem is, go look now in the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa. I am going to see it. It seems like there's a long footnote there now where he didn't really retract it. He thought about it more, and it's a dilemma. It's not really resolved. It's not something which has a clarified what the halacha is regarding clothing of a non-Jew. Let's make it very simple that you know for a fact the shatness. If it's your clothing, it's for sure muksa. If it's a clothing that belongs to a non-Jew, let's say for sure, it's unresolved what the halacha would be if it would be considered muksa. Let's say you're asking a new shah, let's say you do not know. So you want to go basar roiv. You want to go say basar roiv. Roiv clothing in the world today, l'chor are not shanis. Is that really true? I don't know. L'chor it is true. L'chor it is true.
I think it is, but I believe not.
Very expensive clothing. You have to maybe you want to differentiate between very expensive clothing and run-of-the-mill. The clothing that's cheap, run-of-the-mill, is usually, probably for sure, ruba de ruba, 80-90%, definitely not shanis.
I've been taking a suit in my whole life. Never once did a guy tell me I've shot.
Don't say that in public, because that means you're not wearing fancy clothing.
That's true.
The high end. Go to the department stores. Go to the where they don't let you in. You know, they have to take you in behind closed doors. To the really, really $5,000 suits. Guess what? Most of those clothing have shotness.
Imported suits. They found it that time. Remember in the early 60s when E.J. Corvex opened up on 59th Street, they had $29 and $39 suits to get people in the store. The $39 suits were full of shotness.
Full of shotness.
Full of them.
Uh-huh.
They were happy. They sent it in. They had to throw out the suit. They had some.
Okay, that happens sometimes, but today there's new technology. Yeah. Today, the way they make the cheap suits is almost no shanis. The technology has changed. They use materials which either have a shanis is not good for. But I think it's a fact. The very high end stuff that's like handmade. It's handmade, and you know, there's more human input into the fashioning of these materials. Does have shanis. So do you want to go say it's 50-50? I don't know. I don't know. So, but that's a bit of a... Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. We'll take a very short break, and we'll do a little bit more. I want to try to finish up the sefer, some beautiful things about Sefarim. Sefarim from Chaim Kanievsky.